Women have always been healers. Cultural myths from around the world describe a time when only women knew the secrets of life and death, and therefore they alone could practice the magical art of healing. The emergence of women whose consciousness blends with the ancient themes of healing is the single most promising event in healthcare. Jean Ochterberg.
Empowerment in education. Two powerful elements that will help you break free of convention and transform your passion for wellness to a level beyond the status quo. The Essential Oil Revolution, where you're given the tools to supersede an ordinary everyday lifestyle. Inspiring speakers, DIY recipes, healthy living tips, and more. You'll discover it all here. So tune in and get ready for a wellness revolution.
Welcome to the Essential Oil Revolution. I am your host, Samantha Lee Wright, and today we are talking all about women healers of the world. Our special guest, Holly Bellobono, is just simply an amazing woman. She has spent the past 7 years researching this book, Women Healers of the World. She's been to many different countries and spoken to some of the most amazing women out there who have really pushed medicine and healing and herbs to the forefront. And we have to thank all of them for their amazing work. And we're going to talk about essential oils and the history of essential oils with women as well. It's really fascinating stories, insights, and wisdom from Holly today. You're going to really enjoy this episode. But before we get started, let's pull a recipe out of our DIY dugout. I've specifically picked this recipe for this particular episode, and you'll know why in a minute, because I'm calling it It's That Time of the Month Again blend. This recipe comes from Carrie in Taos, New Mexico, and thank you so much for sending it our way. Just mix together clary sage, lavender, fennel, and jasmine essential oil in equal parts with your favorite carrier oil. Apply often to your lower abdomen and along the spine just before and during your cycle. Thanks, Carrie, for sending that one in. If you have your own DIY recipe to send into the show, you can email us at revolutionoilspodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to include your website as well for people to get in touch with you.
Hello, dear friends. As an essential oil user, I know that you have probably come to not only appreciate, but to actually expect the powerful shift in emotions that you can get instantaneously when smelling your essential oils. When someone's dealing with the complex emotion of grief, life can get pretty heavy. Although emotions and essential oils can both be good allies, sometimes more is needed. I want to introduce you to a new podcast called A Place of Yes that is now available wherever you listen to podcasts. The host of the show is Heather Strother. Heather actually had a severe loss when she lost her 4-year-old son, Jack, suddenly to medical complications. 13 years later, now Heather is sharing the only way that she could move forward from the loss. This was by channeling her grief for the good and finding a place of yes. Now, her and her husband have created a nonprofit organization called Jack's Help from Heaven. Since then, they've helped hundreds of families with medically fragile children raise more than $1 million to help them to purchase with items that are not just medically necessary, but also convenient. Their goal is to improve the quality of life, and it offers you an opportunity to learn strategies to cope with grief and how to truly be there for someone that you love that is grieving. Now, sometimes the guests aren't just talking about the loss of a child, but the loss of a life they thought that they were going to live. And I know that we can all relate to that. Please listen to A Place of Yes now wherever you listen to podcasts. And also visit our sponsor at jackshelpfromheaven.org/news/podcast and learn about Heather and Brian's incredible nonprofit organization.
Hello, dear friends. In today's world, it's hard to maintain balance in any area of life. This includes in regard to our hormones. Let's face it, stress impacts everyone, and this affects our hormones. Compound stress on top of an already fluctuating cycle, and not so happy symptoms can result. Thankfully, we have essential oils to tame our mind and body, but a lot of times, many women need something more to keep their hormones at a healthy level. And that something more is where Happy Mammoth comes in. And right now, they are generously offering you 15% off your first order when you visit happymammoth.com and use promo code REVOLUTION. Happy Mammoth is a forward-thinking, all-natural wellness brand. They are obsessed with empowering people with quality natural health solutions aimed at promoting total body health and vitality. I love their comprehensive formula, Hormone Harmony, which contains herbal extracts that help to support hormonal levels, stress, mood, resiliency, and blood sugar. In fact, it contains adaptogenic herbs that help the body adapt to any kind of stressors. This can help to keep hormones in much better balance. Due to its synergy, Hormone Harmony formulation can be used for women in perimenopause, menopause, and any female with symptoms of hormone imbalances. What I love as a naturopathic and functional medicine doctor is that their products are third-party tested for quality and purity, free of heavy metals, and free from artificial fillers. For all these reasons, I am confident recommending Happy Mammoth to my clients and grateful to be supplied with my own bottle for a happier mood and less bloated belly during that time of the month. I am so pleased to have a company that stands behind women's health and optimizing wellness through science and education. So please support Happy Mammoth and the show. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with promo code REVOLUTION at checkout. That's happy, MAMMOTH.com, and use promo code REVOLUTION for 15% off your first order.
Well, here we are, revolutionaries. I'm here with Holly Bellabono, and we are talking about women healers of the world.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Before we dive in more to your book, Women Healers of the World, I was wondering if you could give us a little background and briefly share how your journey began into herbalism.
Sure. I actually started down in North Carolina in the mountains where I'm from. I grew up in a family in the suburbs of Asheville and went to supermarkets, went to the doctors. It was a very standard allopathic family. My mom was a registered nurse and my dad is a pharmacist. They're both retired now, but the way we grew up, my brother and sister and I was very, you go to the doctor when you get sick, you go to the grocery store to get your food. And it wasn't until later when I was in college in Boone at Appalachian State that I started learning that, you know, there are actually plants out in your backyard that you can eat. And that was novel to me. I didn't know that. And then I worked on a landscaping crew and began to learn that there are plants that can be medicines as well. So these were eye-opening experiences for me that kind of drew me into the world of plants and nature that I had never discovered. And so I started pursuing the medicinal qualities of plants and realizing what a grounding, healing nature they had. And maybe my parents influenced me toward pharmacology, because I really like the chemistry of plants and the science behind it. But I also really like the intuitive processes that go along with creating healing blends. And I've put those together in a way that I practice herbal medicine that I feel is a very empowering way. It allows anyone to make these connections with plants for themselves and their families and their communities. You don't need a degree. You don't need to be a specialist. It's a one-on-one sort of a people's pharmacy kind of approach. It's very much folk medicine. And I've kind of branched off a little bit from directly practicing herbal medicine to teaching and writing and serving kind of as a documentary for the heritage that's all around us.
I love that. I think that's a huge theme that we have here at the show, is that it's really the people's power. And this is about your relationship to your health, to your body, and to the plants and the oils and whatever you're doing. It's all about you and your journey and trying to take that power, not trying to take the power away from anybody, not trying to take that power away from the doctors and the hospitals and allopathic medicine, but just starting to flourish and spark that flame inside each individual and show them that they have that power as well to take charge of their health.
Yeah, if you can build and nurture your own inner strength, then you you empower yourself, to use that word again, so that, like you said, you're not belittling any other structure or framework. For instance, I find great value in allopathic medicine in certain cases. You know, there are very specific places where it is really useful, and I've used it myself and for my children. But for the most part, if you can build your own reservoir of knowledge and experience, then you can act proactively, you can act preventatively, and you can nourish and nurture first so that you don't come to a place where you need allopathic treatment. And it's very strengthening. It's very confidence building, and it's fun, and it's natural. I think it's just the most, you know, the word holistic is kind of thrown around, but really is, it's taking the whole person into account and building yourself from that base.
I love that. Absolutely love that. So what led you to write your book, Women Healers of the World?
So this was a huge project for me. It was a 7-year research project, and it took me to different countries and different places. But what instigated it was I started, you know, the more you learn about herbal medicine, it's a science. And I started reading about and learning about all these scientists and researchers who made these incredible discoveries with plants, and they were all men. And I, you know, just thinking, looking back on high school and looking back on college, you learn about Hippocrates and Galen, and then you learn about Lister and Culpepper and all these incredible people, but they're all men. Mm-hmm. And you seldom hear about the women in this tradition, in this heritage. And I, being part of the herbal movement and a gardener, I know that women are central to it. Women are key, but you don't hear their voices very often, and they don't get the recognition that I think they deserve in the more scientific arena. So I set out to find women who are achieving these things and to celebrate them. And so I started interviewing women that I knew from herbal conferences, mostly in the United States. And it kind of branched out from there and grew. The book now contains, I think it's 31 women from 20 countries and 16 healing traditions. So I spoke with women from all over the world who are conservationists and botanists, chemists, pharmacists, doctors, and nurses, as well as shamans and flower essence practitioners and midwives, herbalists, homeopaths, all these different areas of research and skill that all have to do with herbs. You know, that was my central tenet, was that they all come together with plants somehow, but they really are amazing women from all over the world, and I just wanted to honor them.
I think that's so important. It's interesting when you talk about the fact that when you learn about medicine and you learn about herbalism and plants, that it is mostly men that you are taught about. But today, you know, there's, I see at least a huge amount of women that are sort of dominating this culture and this niche right now. It seems like women are almost more drawn to it than men are today. Not that there aren't men who are drawn to it and using it today, but I don't know. Do you see more women sort of taking your classes and buying your books and being interested in this kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge population of women. And I don't know what the reason is. I don't know if it's because we connect with it more. I'm not sure, because I've met plenty of men who connect with it just as deeply. I wonder if it's access, and if it's, you know, the society stigma of women being the healers and the providers. We used to not be able to. That used to be a denied to women, and now it's not so much anymore. And so we're able to more publicly commit to these fields that we used to be, you know, kept from. So yeah, there's probably lots of reasons, but definitely I think women are enjoying the plants and they're enjoying the science of it, but they're also enjoying each other. There's a lot of collaboration happening, and there's a lot of celebratory activities that celebrate other women, and it's very congenial, and there's a lot of sisterhood in herbal medicine right now, which I think is just wonderful. So that's a part of my book, is to celebrate the ties that bring us all together as women, in addition to the plants. That sisterhood and that community is so nice, because it never really existed. If it did, it was underground, and now it's above ground and it's open and it's visible. And I think it's very strengthening and joyful. And I think a lot is going to come out of this movement that we haven't even seen yet.
I agree. And it's such a beautiful thing, that collaboration and working in this community. It feels so nourishing to the soul. Well, Holly, do you have a favorite story of yours that is featured in your book? And would you like to share that with everyone?
Let's see. I have so many favorite stories in that book. The women that I talked to just were so inspiring. One of the women was Auntie Velma de la Pena in Hawaii. And I went out and met with several different healers across Oahu. And they were all just amazing people. And this one lady, Auntie Velma, was just, she just struck my heart as such a grounding, wonderful presence. She's a grandmother and a great grandmother. She's a Christian minister and an herbal shaman. She's a kahuna, which is a healer, and a kapuna, which is an elder. And she actually lives in a tent. When I went out to interview her, I was expecting to show up at her house, and her house is actually a big tarp tent with a gravel floor and no walls. And the back of it looks up to the Waimanalo Mountains, this huge mountain range directly behind her. And the front overlooks the Pacific Ocean right below her. And she's in this kind of an energy vortex, and she maximizes that. She really appreciates it. And she's, the people that come to her for la'au lapa'au, which is herbal healing, and lomi lomi, which is massage, and ho'oponopono, which is kind of a mediation technique, she has them really connect with the energy of nature that's around her. She has them swim in the ocean before she does body work on them. She draws a lot of inspiration from the mountains behind her. She's just so grounded and centered and so sweet. She was just a lovely presence. So meeting her and seeing her in that environment and seeing her be so in tune with her surroundings and with the earth was very inspiring for me. You know, there are so many of us, we have to, all of us, you know, women entrepreneurs, we have to do the social media, and we have to post blogs, and we have to do all this stuff, and we have to promote ourselves. And sometimes it just feels a little contrived, which a lot, you know, in any field, not just herbal medicine, but there's a lot of that feeling out there. And she did not. She was very genuine. She was very authentic. There was nothing contrived about her. I could have just stayed with her for months.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed meeting her. She's an inspiration. I feel like she embodies a lot of what we try to accomplish as healers. She was a sister. She was a caregiver. She was an inspiration, but she was also a seeker herself. You know, she didn't pretend to have all the answers. She presented herself as a conduit between the energies that are out there and our own hearts. She kind of acts as a facilitator, which I think is a really special way to be as a healer, that you facilitate between something else and the person who needs your help, rather than kind of the more allopathic model where a doctor might say, well, I'm your cure, you know, which can be a little arrogant, and certainly not every doctor is like that, but it's a way of treating people that is a little bit more self-serving, whereas Auntie Velma Pena was more of a facilitator. She was a conduit, and I thought that was really inspiring.
I always think about birth with this sort of philosophy, and the best midwives that I've seen doing their work act as a conduit and act as a true midwife, which is where they are there to help facilitate. You have the birth of your baby, as opposed to, you know, we have that term of, oh, you know, who delivered your baby, or how many babies have you delivered? And it's like, oh, no, it doesn't work that way. It's the woman having the baby, and having that facilitator help you take control of that process, I think, is just so empowering and so important.
Yeah, you know, it's a small word. It's a small change in lexicon, but it has a huge impact on your whole culture when you think of it in those terms.
Now, apart from the interview that you did with Auntie Velma, were there any personal, you know, lessons or personal experiences that you had from her that sort of changed the way that you now teach or the way that you interact with the plants?
I'm not sure. She just helped me ground more, I think. She really reinforced for me the idea of opening yourself up to what is out there, to other teachers, whether that teacher is a colleague or the plants themselves, you know, just being wide open and ready for that information. Another woman that kind of reinforced that same notion was Mama Kia Ingenlath. She was a woman that I interviewed from Peru, and we interviewed by phone. I didn't get to meet her in person because at the time of our interview, she was battling cancer, and she died soon after we spoke. But she was a phenomenal woman. She had been a midwife and traveled around South America. And when she turned 50, she had a ceremony with friends and said, you know, I've lived the first half of my life for myself. I've done everything for myself. Now it's time for me to give back and live the next half of my life serving others. And the way that she decided to do that was to take in orphans off the streets of Peru. And there were a lot of them. She traveled around, especially around the Sacred Valley, and saw so many children on the streets. And so she decided to take them in. But she didn't just create an orphanage where the children would go eventually to other families. She actually adopted them herself. And so when I spoke with her, she had, it was either 33 or 35 children.
Wow.
Yeah. And she created this wonderful giant family. And not only did she bring them in, she's from America, so she's a white woman. But not only did she bring them in, she made sure that they were learning their own native skills. For instance, their own native language, their singing and songs, their dances, their foods, their art. So she really immersed them in their own culture. She provided food and education for them, of course, but she also reached out in the community. She created a soup kitchen. She created a community center where people could come for night classes and education. She was a huge, powerful resource in her community. And she also taught her kids how to grow edible and medicinal plants. So she shared with me all the different plants they grew in their greenhouses, just really went out of her way to make these children, their lives better and the whole community better. She even created in the community house that she made. She made it so that when the kids grew and reached 17 or 18 and were ready to leave home, it was kind of like a bridge or a stepping stone where they could go work at this community center, get their feet on the ground, learn some skills before they moved off into, you know, the real world. So she had a tremendous impact on them and was very open and I think is very missed now.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that she's passed. What a beautiful woman. So yeah. Selfless.
Yeah. As far as herbs go, you know, she was teaching her kids, all these children, to harvest calendula and mint and red clover and all the plants that we like to grow up here. They were growing in their greenhouses and making beeswax salves and all the basics. You know, you can get so connected to nature using just the basics, brewing a cup of tea. You know, it's so easy to let that be a profound medicine in your life without having to be very complicated about it.
I'm so glad you said that because I think when people first start on their journey of learning about plant medicine and learning about herbs and essential oils, they can get overwhelmed so quickly because there's so many plants out there. So it seems like you have to learn every single plant before you can do anything. And we're sort of held back by fear. So I'm glad that you said that. Not to catch you off guard, but you know, what do you think are the just three plants that people can start to incorporate into their lives today that can really help start that journey and start that connection without feeling like you're overwhelmed?
Yeah, that's a good point because there are so many plants and so many different ways to use them. You can kind of freeze and think, well, I don't use everything, so maybe I shouldn't use anything at all, which you should never do. I think it's wonderful to start with just a handful of plants and get to know them really well. If I were to pick just a few, mint would be an excellent place to start. There are so many different mint plants in the mint family. There's peppermint and spearmint. There's lemon balm. There's motherwort, catnip. These are all really safe herbs that you can do a lot with.
I didn't know catnip was a mint.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a lovely exotic kind of flavor and scent. It spreads like a mint. It's definitely a wonderful mint, and it's soothing and calming. So I like to combine it with chamomile as a tea for especially children at night when they're having trouble sleeping. Catnip is very warming as well, so it's really nice to include in winter teas. Mixes well with licorice and ginger. It's nice for women who have cramps, menstrual cramps, super safe. Nothing in the mint family, there are no alkaloids, and alkaloids are the chemicals that can affect not only the body, but also the mind, like nicotine and caffeine. Mm. Nothing like that is in mint. So mint is super, super safe, really easy to start using. For instance, peppermint and spearmint, I think of them very differently. I use peppermint as it's very warming. It's good for the circulation. So ladies who have cold hands and cold feet, drinking a cup of peppermint tea, you know, it really gets the blood moving to the periphery. So it's good for that. It's good for mental clarity. If you find yourself being kind of foggy and you can't remember things, peppermint can really help with that. So spearmint is different. I think of it as very cooling, whereas peppermint is warming, spearmint is cooling. It can be helpful for conditions that are hot, inflamed, can be very helpful for the digestive system. It supports and maintains healthy digestion. It supports and maintains lower body temperature because it's cooling.
Well, those are really fantastic places to start. Thank you for sharing all of that. I'm curious about your book. I know you talk a lot about different plants and different herbs and different healing modalities. Are essential oils featured in your book at all?
They are. Essential oils are especially featured with a woman who lived a long time ago in the first century AD, Maria Prophetisa. And she's in there because she was a phenomenal woman of her time. She lived in Alexandria, Egypt. And we don't know that much about her. We know that she wrote a book called the Maria Practicum. We haven't found a copy of it, but other sources refer to it. So we know that it did exist. She was an alchemist and also a Gnostic. And so as an alchemist, she was a scientist interested in transforming substances into gold. Very much interested in that transition of elements. As a Gnostic, she was spiritually interested in the release of soul from matter. And so she was both of these. So a very transcendental, interesting woman, interested in change and mutation. And she kept a laboratory in Alexandria, apparently a mobile laboratory. She was constantly on the move and constantly changing her name. She went by several different aliases, including Maria of Cleopha, Maria Prophetisa, Maria the Jewess. And people aren't quite sure why, but I suspect that she was trying not to be emulated. She was trying to keep her work secret. She was in the process of making quite a few discoveries and was an inventor. So one of the discoveries that she's credited with is what was called Mary's Black or sulfuric acid. Mary's Black is sulfuric acid, and she is the one credited with discovering that. And it was probably an accident, but she is definitely credited with the invention of the distillation machine or the still. And this was very early. This was several hundred years before Avicenna. And she created a three-part machine where she could heat up water, mix that water with herbs, collect the evaporating water and the terpenes or the essential oils that rise up from that, because those are the only volatile chemicals that will rise up with evaporating water. She would collect that in a second chamber, and then that it would condense and drip through to a third chamber where she would harvest that water. And of course, the essential oils float on the top, and what's underneath is called the hydrosol now. So she was the first to create this, and people would use it as a cosmetic. It wasn't considered medicinal yet, although it probably did help in many ways. It was used as a topical cosmetic for many hundreds of years. But she is the inventor of that. And without that, you know, perfumery, aromatherapy, herbal medicine, we would not have the hydrosols, the flower waters, and the essential oils that we do now. She was an amazing woman, very controversial, very secretive, very interested in geometry and physics. She is credited with lots of theories about energy and cycles, very strange stuff, but very interesting. And it all centered around plants and energy and transmutation and transcendentalism that was both of a physical nature and a spiritual nature. So really fascinating.
Wow, that is fascinating. One of the questions I just love to ask people in general is, you know, if you could have dinner with anybody now, dead or alive, who would it be? And that sounds like someone I'd want to have dinner with for sure.
Yeah, pretty exciting woman. And hopefully, you know, I hope that one day her book comes to light. I hope a copy of it is still out there. You know, another way that we can honor her is by using the Mary's bath in our kitchens. It's the little, you know, when you melt butter or chocolate on your stove, you have a pot and then above it, another pot that sits on a groove. And that's where you put your chocolate so that it doesn't burn.
Like a double boiler?
Exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. It's called Mary's bath, or a band named after her because that's what she invented.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, super neat. So these are the scientists. You know, these are great role models for our kids because it just shows how inventive and creative women have always been, you know, always. And thankfully, she got the credit for it, whereas a lot of women haven't, but she's one that can point our kids to and say, hey, you know, she did it. It's really cool. And she probably went through a lot of, she had a dangerous life, having to change her name, having to move her location, but it just points to how powerful she was because people knew she had something good going on.
Yeah. Just anyone in general. And I think especially as women having those innovative ideas, you have to kind of break through these barriers and these walls. But thank goodness that they did and that they still continue to do that.
Yeah. It's a real testament to having that courage and confidence to move forward in something that you believe in.
Well, what message would you want to share with the listeners out there that are on their health journeys, and especially the women, just in regards to, you know, going forward and forming that relationship with plants and with themselves and their families?
I like what you said earlier about starting small. You know, don't get intimidated. Don't feel like it's a giant, complex system of theories and everything. It's just plants. It's nature. It's Mother Nature. We all connect in our own way, and there's no right or wrong way to do it. And we all come to it in different ways and times. For instance, several of the women that I interviewed for the book had mentors when they were children. They had a mother or an aunt or someone teaching them and guiding them. They were under the wing of this person who led them into the world of plants and healing and medicine. And that's something that is incredibly special and helpful, but not all of us have that opportunity. I didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, my mom was a nurse and my dad was a pharmacist. And when I entered herbalism, it was a shock to them. They did not appreciate that. Just like when I had my babies at home with a midwife, it really scared them. They did not understand why I would not have it in a hospital. So, you know, there are people out there like me who didn't have that early introduction to plants, who had to come about it alone later and seek out their teachers and seek out the information and try a lot harder. But that doesn't mean it's any less valuable or appropriate. Everybody comes to it in their own ways. Another thing that I would like to mention about that is if you are in the position as a woman, as a healer, as somebody working with plants or essential oils, if you're in the position to bring on a young woman under your wing and mentor her and help her out, please do. You know, that's such an important thing to give of yourself, to give your knowledge and to help somebody else come up in your own field of understanding. It's a gift. And even if you didn't experience that as a kid yourself, reach out to somebody else in your community who could use that and mentor them. I think that's really important.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I'm glad you said that. And is that something that you do there at the Vineyard? I mean, I know you host a lot of classes and workshops. Do you want to just talk a little bit more about those offerings that you share?
Yeah. I do host, I do mentor people now and then. Usually in the summers is when people want to be here on Martha's Vineyard. It's really nice then. And so there are a number of young women who come through to, you know, the traveling, and I'll mentor a young woman while she's here for a few days or a week. Free of charge. She can just help me out in my apothecary or my garden and just kind of a one-on-one exchange, free goodwill exchange of ideas. But then I also run an herb school, which is a little bit more intensive and geared toward more intermediate learners. I have the Bella Bona School of Herbal Medicine, and I have a curriculum that's both distant, so you could learn from anywhere at any time. It's a 7-month program, and you do it on your own. You learn about all the body systems, the anatomy and physiology, and then the herbal medicine applicable to those systems. And then I also do the same curriculum here on Martha's Vineyard every June. It's a 2-week intensive. So I have people from all over the country come here to the island, and it's really beautiful here in June. And we work together through the curriculum as a small group, and that results in a certificate as a community herbalist.
Well, Holly, this has been so much fun, and I've learned so much, and I think that you've probably inspired a lot of our listeners. So thank you for that. Before you go, we like to leave our listeners with some real practical advice just by sharing with them some insights on different people's daily health habits and routines. Do you have just like a simple daily health habit that you do every day that you could share with our listeners?
Except for the past month when it has been snowy and icy, I tend to take my dog for a walk in the mid-afternoon. We walk for about a mile in the woods, and that is such a wonderful deep breath kind of point in the day for me. I get out and I stretch my legs and I enjoy the trees and enjoy my dog. So that's something that I try to do pretty much every day.
So important. And especially getting in the woods like that. Love it.
Yeah.
And finally, what's just one thing that we should all ditch completely and replace with something healthier today?
Complaining. Don't complain. Next time you have a negative thought, complaint, or judgment, ditch it and replace that thought with something positive.
You know, it's fascinating how many people have given a similar answer to that. And I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, I would kind of always expect people to say something like, oh, replace soda with water or margarine for butter or something. But I love that this is a theme that keeps coming back on the show. I love it.
Good.
Well, great. Now, if people wanted to learn more about you or get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can get on my website. I have two. One is either vineyardherbs.com or the other one is hollybellabono.com. And then they can also email me at holly@vineyardherbs.com.
Well, I don't know what else to say besides that was amazing. I just loved hearing all of Holly's practical advice and words of wisdom and insights into that vast history. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for sharing. And as always, keep on learning, keep on discovering, and most importantly, keep on treating yourself well. You are worth it.